We're holding on page Ayin Beis in Nedarim, the last paragraph. The end of the Masechta, the last Mishnah, deals with a couple of cases where a woman says something that implies that she's going to be also to her husband. So the Mishnah mentions that that originally there the din would be that the husband therefore has to divorce her, and then afterwards the Chachamim rethought it and said not necessarily. Shema nosna ineh ba'acher, she may just be looking to get out of a bad marriage, and therefore she's making an excuse. So the Mishnah deals with a couple of such cases, and the Gemara deals with a variety of other cases as well, where she says that she's tamei to him, that she that that or whatever that that she's otherwise that she's in one way or another also to him. So at the end of the Masechta, the Gemara deals with a couple of cases along those lines, where there's a concern, there was someone in the house, where there's the concern she may have been mezana with him, but maybe not. So the Gemara tells a case. How who know if the ol gabi dehai intsa? There was a noyif. There was a guy who was known to be mezana with married women. He went into the house of a certain woman, also gavra. But then the man of the house, her husband, came home. Solik noyif. So the noyif had to the noyif wanted to hide. So he went asif bekloy bava, and he went inside the partition, the curtain in front of the door. So he's hiding inside the curtain. Figuring, I guess, when the husband doesn't see him, then he'll slip out. Have a machzen tachli tamam. There was sitting on the table over there. There was sitting some tachli. In English, it's called cress. It's a vegetable. It's a vegetable that has a sharp taste. We find often throughout Shas they would use it. It was a regular food. They ate it in salads and other things like that. The problem is, v'taminun chivya, a snake then went and ate some of the cress. Now, throughout Shas, we have the concern, it primarily with liquids, but we also have with certain kinds of foods, such as cress, other foods like that that have a high water content. There's the concern that as the snake ate from it, it may have injected some venom into it, and then you eat, and then a person comes and drinks the liquid or eats the cress or whatever, then they're going to get poisoned. So nobody other than the noyif saw the snake eating from it. Boy, mora de basil mechel min ahu tachli. The master of the house, the husband, was about to eat some of that cress. Beloy daita de intisa, without the knowledge of his wife. His wife didn't know that it's endangered either. Now the Gemara is going to go on to say that the Gemara is going to go on to say that that we have strong reason to believe that this guy was not in fact mezana with the wife, and in fact, even though he doesn't belong in the house in the first place, but at least that he wasn't necessarily mezana with her, as the Gemara is going to go on to work out. Ben Yehoyada points out that actually that's the reason why the Gemara points out that this was without the wife knowing. If she knew that this cress had been poisoned or may have been poisoned by the snake, and she wasn't going to tell her husband not to eat it, then we have very good reason to think that she was mezana with this guy, and therefore she wants her husband out of the way. So, like this, though, the fact that she didn't know means so now omaleahu noyif. So now the noyif, this no goodnik, calls out to the husband, loy techo min hoin, don't eat that crest, etaminun chivya, because a snake ate from it. Well, so now all of a sudden the guy discovers the stranger is in his house. Now the question is, was his wife in fact mezana with him? Omar Rava intase shaya. So Rava says in this, and again the Gemara had brought some earlier cases which are not here in Ein Yaakov, but Rava says the wife is in fact mutter to her husband. Im isa de ovad isura, because if in fact they had done an isur, if in fact they had committed znus, nicholai de leicho v'leimus, then the noyif would actually rather that the husband should eat from the cress and die, and then that way he's out of the picture, and then the noyif can have his wife freely available. We find in a nevuah of Yechezkel, he's comparing the Jewish people to, he's comparing the kingdom of Yehuda and Yisrael respectively to two women who were both mezana against their husband, and he describes, he says they've committed niuf, they've committed adultery, and there's blood on their hands. So in context, the pasuk means that it means that they were worshiping Avodah Zarah and they were sacrificing their children to Avodah Zarah and so forth. But here we see from the phrasing of the pasuk that a noyif will be very prone to want to kill the husband, so that the husband will be out of the way, and then he'll be able to have freer access to the wife. So therefore, so now we're so fine. Tosafot says maybe you maybe not to the degree of actually going and killing him with his bare hands, but certainly at least he wouldn't at least protest to prevent the husband from eating this possibly poisoned cress. So therefore, we have very good reason to assume, Rava says, that nothing actually happened over here. Yes, the guy came in with bad motives, and Ben Yehoyada points out, the fact is, we're calling him a noyif. So we're not just talking about that he's stam an innocent guy. He definitely is the a lowlife, but nevertheless, to go so far as to say that the wife should be usser, we're not going to say that. The Ran points out, by the way, that if it weren't for that, strictly speaking, the husband doesn't have to believe the Gemara discusses, and it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. Strictly speaking, the husband doesn't always have to believe that his wife committed adultery anyhow, and therefore be required to divorce her because of this whole thing of Shema. She may just be trying to get out of the marriage for reasons of her own. Nevertheless, the Ran says the point is, at least in some of these cases, a Baal Nefesh should be careful. And I have to be concerned that his wife was in fact Mizana and is also to him. But based on, in this case, for example, based on this point that Rava is making, the Ran says even a Baal Nefesh would not be required to divorce his wife. Because again, we have very strong reason to believe that no actual niyuf took place over here. Well, the Gemara asks Pshita. In that case, then isn't it obvious, based on what we just said? Yeah, it's true that the fact that he tried to save the husband's life shows that nothing happened over here. The answer is Mao de Tema, because Faket, you might think the other way around. Isura of it. Maybe in fact they did commit the Isur. Maybe in fact they did commit adultery. Vahai de Omale. So why does he tell the husband, don't eat from this cress? You don't want to get poisoned. De Nichole de Loile Musbal. On the contrary, the Noyef may prefer that the husband should not die. De Tehevi Intse Maim Gnuvam Yimtiku. This way, the wife will be to him, like the description in the Pasuk, that Pasuk in Mishle, stolen waters are sweet. It was water by itself, it has no taste. But when it's stolen, then a person feels a certain sweetness. Like the fact that something is off limits, that itself gives them a certain title for it. The lechem storim yinam, and bread in secret is pleasant. So in other words, maybe Taka, he dafka wants the thrill of that this woman is actually also to him, that she's an Eishes Ish. And yet he can, can commit znus with her. So therefore, that might give us a reason to argue that Fakert, he does the very fact that he wants the husband alive. Maybe that itself shows that in fact he did commit znus and that he wants this to continue. He wants to be able to have this thrill. Kamash Malan, therefore we're telling, therefore Rava is telling us that we don't say that, and in fact we say the fact that he's concerned for the husband's life shows that that in fact they did not commit znus. Now, Marsha refers to a couple of things over here that Tosfos say on this. First of all, something very relevant that was actually it was just a couple of days ago in Daf HaYomi. The Gemara also brings this pasuk Mayim Gnuvim Yimtku V'Lechem Storim Yinam in connection with a different story where the Gemara says over there that ever since the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, the tam of bia has been taken away from everybody and given only to the Oved Avera. Marsha explains over there that what it means is this pasuk is from Mishle, which is long before the Churban. But it means, in other words, before the Churban, everybody felt the real pleasure, the ultimate pleasure of bia. After the Churban, when Rashi says over there in Sanhedrin, everybody's worried, everybody's constantly has concerns and worries and the strains and the stresses of Golos. So then the only ones that remain by are the Oved Aveira. So, but over here, Marsha says that's relevant over there in that Gemara. It's not really relevant over here. Because again, that pasuk is written by Shlomo, which is long before the Churban. But anyway, also Tosfos says the point is that the Rava's point is the Noyef may not be aware of that point. He may not realize that point of Mayim Gnuvim Yimtiku, and therefore Taka he so he thinks that you know what it would make things much easier to be with this woman if her husband is out of the picture, and it doesn't occur to him this point of Mayim Gnuvim Yimtiku. On the other hand, again, Marsha says it doesn't really seem that doesn't really seem to fit so well with the relevant Gemara in Sanhedrin. In any case, that's what Rava is saying, that it does work that way, and therefore we have good reason to say that there was no niyuf over here, and the wife is in fact mutar to her husband. There's an interesting point that Rebbe makes in a letter or two, where I haven't found any siyum from the Rebbe on Nedarim. Most Masechtas that Rebbe at one time or another made a public siyum on, I never found one on Nedarim. But there was a letter in the back of one of the volumes of, in the back of Lekut HaSichas Chelek Yudches that Rebbe wrote to a kehillah in Baltimore that had finished in the Chofs, that had finished learning Masechta Nedarim, and that Rebbe pointed out an interesting point over here. The whole idea of a neder, as we learned throughout the Masechta, is that a neder is not necessarily such a positive thing. We learned yesterday, we learned various times throughout the Masechta, we're going to learn again now in Nazir, that a neder is not always such a positive thing. The one advantage of it is, though, that if a person is prone to do something that's also, and he makes a neder, then at least it means now other people know that he's doing it, and therefore that so therefore that 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 so now because of so that that creates some social pressure on him to not break that neder and to in fact stop doing the avera. And we see that over here, where we see at the end of the Gemara over here that a noyef is not going to be is not in the previous story, which is actually not here in Ein Yaakov. You find that the noyef is hiding out here. Also, you have that originally he hides out inside the. Inside the curtain over there, inside the door curtain. The point being, in other words, that even though even a low life like that, he's not so brazen necessarily as to go and do an aveda in public. Even he will try to hide out, and therefore, that's the connection with the Masechta as a whole, with Masechta Nedarim. As far as this Mayim Gnuvim Yimtiku, there's a positive angle on it. Also, you have the famous story involving the Alter Rebbe and Rabbi Avraham HaMalach, where the deal was. The Alter Rebbe was the great expert in Nigla. Rabbi Avraham was the great expert in Chassidus. So the deal was that they would spend time teaching each other. And then the famous story goes when they were learning together, the Malach was so mufshit from Yonah Olam Hazeh, he didn't know what's going on around him, that the Alter Rebbe would take the clock and turn the hands back so they could have more time to learn together. And Rabbi Avraham didn't realize even that the clock hands had been turned back. And the Alter Rebbe said this is an example of Mayim Gnuvim Yimtiku in the positive sense. That extra time that he stole, so to speak, from Rabbi Avraham to learn extra chassidus was more precious to him than the time that than the actual fixed time they were supposed to have. Going now on to Masechta Nozir. So Masechta Nozir, in a way, is a very natural sequel to Masechta Nedarim, because Nedarim is about Nedarim in general, and Nozir is about one particular neder of Nazirus. The Gemara actually discusses here at the beginning of Nozir what Masechta Nozir is doing in Seder Noshim, and the answer is, the Gemara discusses what Nozir is doing in Seder Noshim, and basically the answer is that the next Masechta after it is Soita, and as we know, the famous idea, Roya Soita Bukukula, Yazar Atamin Ayayin, that when a person sees what happens, the degradation of a Soita, and realizes it was brought about by her overindulging in wine, then he'll swear off wine and become a Nozir, and therefore it goes together. At the beginning of Nedarim, actually, the Gemara, at the beginning of Soita, rather, the Gemara makes a different point, which is that at the beginning of Nedarim, the Gemara makes a different point, that because in Ksubas it talks about a case, one parak over there begins with a husband imposing a neder on his wife, therefore the next thing comes is Nedarim. The Rosh discusses that actually kind of both reasons are needed. You would think Nozir really ought to belong in Seder Kodshim, after all it belongs with the other Korbanos. What's it doing in Seder Noshim? So you need the connection with Soita, but then you also need that on the other hand, then fine, so why aren't Nozir and Soita both in Seder Kodshim? So the Soita also has a korban after all. And the answer is that after all, it has the connection with Nedarim. And there is also the point, of course, with Nedarim, that the main thing the Torah focuses on in Nedarim is in fact the fact that a husband can be made for his wife's Nedarim and a father his daughter's, and therefore for that reason it belongs in Seder Noshim. So Masechta Nozir now. So here also we have, just like in Nedarim, the Pirush that's printed under Rashi's name is not really from Rashi. The general understanding is that it comes from the Rivon, one of Rashi's sons-in-law. For this Masechta, many times the popular Pirush that's widely used is the Rosh's Pirush, and then in addition you also have this Pirush of the Rivon and also Tosfos. So the Masechta begins by talking about kinuyim of Nazirus. Namely, in other words, you can have a person actually says, I will be a Nazir. But then you have, the Mishnah describes, there can be various partial statements that he makes called yodos, which still amounts to a statement of Nazirus. So one example that the Mishnah gives is that he says, Ehei Noe, I will be beautiful. So now, a Nazir is beautiful with his long hair, so that amounts to a partial statement, a yad, like a yad is like a handle, if you use a handle to grasp a hold of a keli, the same way you use a partial declaration to amount to the full declaration. But the Gemara is bothered by, how do we know? Why does Ehei Noah necessarily mean that I'll be beautiful as a Nazir? Maybe it means I'll be beautiful before Hashem with mitzvahs. As Tanya, as we learn in the Braisa, when the Pasuk says, Zeh Keli Vanvehu, this is my God, we say in Shira, the Jewish people said in Shira Sayyam, and I will make him beautiful. So that means, En Noah, the fun of the mitzvahs, I will be beautiful before Hashem with the mitzvahs that I do. The point is why the Gemara is darshaning that is because it can't mean I will beautify Hashem. How do you beautify Hashem? He's a ein loy guf, like we have in today's Shlosha Prakim of Rambam. So therefore, it has to mean that I will make myself beautiful before him. Es el fun of sukkah no. I'll make in honor of Hashem a beautiful sukkah. Lulav no, beautiful lulav. Tzitzis no, nice tzitzis. Echt el fun of sefer Torah no. I'll write in honor of Hashem a beautiful sefer Torah. Ve'ech rechenu b'shiroyin noyim, and I'll wrap it with nice silks, with a nice mantle. There are a couple of other interesting points, and the Gemara brings this point of zekei divanveu in a few other places. And there's also an explanation from Abba Shaul that it also says that it also Vanvehu is Anivahu. I will be like he, Hashem, is. And that means I'm going to follow the midas of Hashem. Mahu rachu, mafato rachu, mahu chanun, afato chanun, etc. That whole thing is also included in Zekeli Vanvehu. There's an interesting vort on it, actually. Now Targum Onkelos translates Zekeli Vanvehu, Miloshen Nove, that I will build a dwelling for the Eibishter. So therefore, there's an interesting explanation. All these things go together. How do we build a dwelling? How do we build a Dida B'Tachtonim? Is through these things, through beautifying the mitzvahs, and also through having, and also through improving our midas. In any case, the point is, the Gemara ends up answering that the answer is that he's actually saying this word, Ehei Noah, when a Nazir is passing by, and therefore that means that I'm going to be like him. So actually, I think the Gemara says, actually, I think that's a different answer. I think the Gemara says, Ehei Noah is actually when he's holding on to his hair and saying, Ehei Noah. So it's clear that he means something involving his hair, namely that I'm going to let my whole hair grow beautifully like a Nazir. Further on, the Gemara brings from the Mishnah, Pisgah, Harei Alai L'Shaleach Perah. If a person says that I'm obligating myself, L'Shaleach Perah. Then Harei's a Nazir, then that's also an expression of Nazir. Now, the point now, so the understanding is that L'Shaleach means to let grow, and Perah means a growth of hair. So I'm making a neder that I'm going to let my hair grow long. So that amounts to then that he's saying that's one of the three things of a Nazir, and therefore that amounts to that he's taking the zeros on himself. So the Gemara asks me, my dahai dahodin shiluach ribuyahu. How do we know that the word shiluach, the word l'shaleach, means to grow it long? Dichtiv shlochayich pardes rimonim. As the pasuk says, your growths that grow from you are like an orchard of pomegranates. So we see, in other words, the word shalach means to let grow. So the question is, ema midi da'avuri. The question is, though, that maybe this word l'shaleach actually means to remove. As we find another place where the word shalach means to send away, and Hashem sends water onto the outskirts. That in other words, Hashem takes water from one place and causes it instead to flow to a different place, as far as rainwater and other things like that. So therefore, maybe the shaleach pera means, on the contrary, he's making a neder, not that he's going to grow his hair as a nazir, but on the contrary, that he's going to cut his hair, and that's not a neder of nazirus. The answer is Tana Pera Pela Ya Pera Pera Yalef. The answer is the Tana is basing himself on a Gzeira Shava that explains what the word Pera means. Sivhocha Kodesh Ye Gado Pera Sarosh. You have the Pasuk by a Nazir that it says that he grows the Pera of his hair long. So regarding a Kohen Hedyot, the Pasuk says in Yechezkel, they're not allowed to let their hair grow long, which is why you have the halacha that a Kohen Hedyot has to cut his hair at least once every 30 days when he's serving in the Beis HaMikdash.
Well, you said something about it might mean, it was just before Amir, I should have stopped you
yeah.
then. It means the opposite, that it's descending away instead of the
yeah
going. What is
So
it?
we're saying, because the pasuk says v'sheleach ma'im al pnei chutzis, where the word v'sheleach means to send away, that Hashem causes the water to disappear from one place and go to someplace else. So maybe he means that I'm going to make my hair disappear. I'm going to cut it. So the answer is that we're learning from the word pera. since he said the shaleach pera and the word pera by a kohen hediot definitely means growing hair, because in fact a kohen, that's the what Yechezkel is saying. Pera lo yishaleichu. On the contrary, he doesn't mean they're not allowed to cut their hair. On the contrary, he means they're not allowed to grow their hair long. A kohen serves in the Beis Hamikdash with his hair grown more than 30 days, then it's also in his chayiv misa for it. So the same way, when it, since it says by the nozir gadol pera saroshe, means a growth of hair, and therefore, in other words, when he's saying l'shaleach pera, then it means I'm going to grow my hair until it reaches the stage that can be called pera, namely 30 days, because the minimum length of a term of nazirus is 30 days.
I think we can judge it for longer too.
A person can do it for longer, but the minimum amount that a person can be a nozir for is 30 days. So therefore, when he says the shaleach pera, then it definitely means to grow the hair. The boy sema, another possibility, hi shaleach mayim nami ribuhu. Another possibility is you're misunderstanding the words of shaleach mayim. It doesn't mean necessarily to send away the water, as in the Gemara thought originally, that it means to make the that Hashem makes the water disappear from one place and flow and appear in another place, but rather it means also to increase. Kedimatagum Rabbi Yosef, as we find in the Targum on that pasuk in Iyov, dekad mashkin le maya lapera, where like when you pour water on fruit that's growing, the ravi and the fruit grows. So in other words, we see that the word the shaleach also means to grow. Now the Rosh points out, I mean, there's no question, obviously there definitely are places where the word l'shaleach means to send away. Shalach hasami v'yavduni, there's lots of examples. Nevertheless, the point is that at least the Gemara wasn't so much used, the Gemara still needs the previous answer that pera means long hair. It's not enough to say the shaleach by itself, because it's true that's not even necessarily a yad. That wouldn't even be a yad, because it doesn't necessarily mean to grow hair at all. So we definitely still need the previous answer that pera means long hair. All the Gemara is doing is, by the way, you were worried about that the shaleach in and of itself could mean to cut the hair. No, because you can see that the word the shaleach in connection with things that grow can also mean to promote their growth, not to cut them. So it's both, really. In other words, you still need the previous answer, and you also need this answer as well. Tosfos points out the same thing. You have shaleach to shalach haseim, but yishlach Yaakov. So the fact is, we still need the gzeira shava from the word pera to fully explain it. An interesting point is what's the limud in Avodas Hashem that we're supposed to learn from this particular piece of the Gemara. After all, the Ein Yaakov is including things that are supposed to enhance, as he talks about in his Akdama, he talks about things about the greatness of Hashem and the greatness of the Jewish people and of the Torah and Midas Tovas and so forth. This just seems to be a fairly technical piece of Gemara. He points out that this is, after all, you know, it's always good to remember about the good that Hashem does as far as giving rain. And in addition, also rain is used in the pasuk as a metaphor for the outflowing of nevuah onto people. Ki kasha yerida geshem v'ashalig min hashamayim, like we have in the haftarah of a fast day. And therefore, it's an appropriate piece to mention over here to remind us that Hashem is shileach mayim, that Hashem sends down a flow of elikus to us, and it causes fruits, and it causes fruits of Torah and mitzvahs and elikus to grow in the world.
So
therefore, that's why this piece is in Ein Yaakov, he's explaining. Further on, the Gemara talks about an interesting point as follows. The Mishnah says that what if the person says, Harei olai tziporim? If he says, I'm taking on myself an obligation of birds. So Rabbi Meir says that's enough to make him a Nazir, and the Chachamim disagree. So the Gemara explains one meaning of it is, what does birds have to do with Nazirus? So the Gemara explains, because you have a pasuk involving Nebuchadnezzar. You have the famous thing where Nebuchadnezzar was where Hashem made him crazy, and he ran off to the forests and lived with the animals for several years until he realizes that Hashem runs the world. And the pasuk uses the expression over there that his hair grew as long as his hair grew long, and his nails grew like the claws of eagles. So the mayor holds that when he's saying that the mayor holds, if a person is saying that I'm obligating to myself to bring birds, something involving birds in connection with hair, then it means that you refer to that pasuk. We see therefore that birds are mentioned in connection with hair, and therefore it amounts to that he's saying a neder regarding his hair, and therefore he's a nazir, and the Chachamim disagree with that concept. So the Gemara is discussing the point: can there be such a thing when a person is saying that a certain word that's near another word, and you're saying basically the first word is like an index to the second word? Does such a thing work? So the Gemara discusses. Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, ha'oimu yamin hareza shvua. If a person says, right, as in right hand, then that's a shavua. Meaning, if a person just says, for example, I won't eat this bread, that's not a shavua. At most, that would be a promise. He shouldn't just wantonly break it. But if he does, then he's not being over on a shavua. But if he, the classic kind of shavua is a person says, I swear in Hashem's name that I won't eat this bread, let's say. But now you also have by shavuos, just like by nedarim, you have the concept of yodos, where a person can make a partial declaration and it's considered a valid shavua. And one example, Braisa is saying, if he says, yamin, that I won't eat this bread. So now the question, yamin, the right hand. So the question is, my timer, lav mishum dechtiv, isn't it because we find the word yamin in connection with a shavua? So therefore, that would show, in other words, the word yamin is not in and of itself a lashon of shavua, but it's kind of like an index to a shavua. When you're using the word yamin, you're thinking of the pl place where yamin is used in connection with a shavua, and therefore it amounts to a lashon of shavua. Namely, Dichtiv, as the Pasuk says, at the end of Daniel, in Sefer Daniel, he's had several visions about the four Goliaths and about when Mashiach is going to come and so forth. And at the end, he asks the Malach who's been talking with him on Moshe Ketzap Lois, how long is this going to be going on? Vilang Muchen Golos. And then the Pasuk says, the Malach that Daniel was speaking with lifted up his right hand and his left hand towards heaven, and he swore by the life of the world, he swore in the Eibishter's name that there will be an end to the Golos. So the point is, we see the word yamin and the word smoil, for that matter, are used in connection with shavur. So the Braisa is saying that if a person says yamin, I won't eat this bread, then that amounts to a shavur. So doesn't that mean, in other words, so that would be a proof that yes, even though yamin itself is not a lashon of shavur, but it's associated with the lashon of shavur, and therefore that's enough for it to be considered a yad. And the Gemara says, answer. The Gemara answers, Amri. No, the Chachmei Yeshiva said, Loi. No, it's not so much that Yad itself is an index to something else. Mishum d'yamin gufa ikri shvur. The word yamin itself is a lashon shvur. So it's not, in other words, like this. The Gemara was thinking that yamin is a key word which points to another key word which is a shvur. Now the Gemara is saying, no, yamin itself is a key word. Yamin itself is a lashon of shvur. D'tanya, as we learn in a brisa, minayin la'omi yamin sheishvur, hashu shvur. How do we know, Taka, that a person says yamin, then it amounts to a shvur? Shenema, as the passage says, nishba Hashem b'yaminoi. Hashem has sworn with his right hand that there's going to be a geula amitis v'ashlema, and that the goyim won't harass us and take our things anymore, and so forth. So we see that that Hashem's right hand is actually used for the shvur. The malach is only lifting up his hands, and then he's swearing. But here we see Nishba Hashem b'yaminoi, that Hashem's right hand itself is something that you can swear with. And we nine la'im smol shu shvur. And how do we know the same thing if he says the word smol? Shenema uvizroya uzoi. The pasuk continues that Hashem swears with his powerful arm. So when you have b'yaminoi uvizroya uzoi, then we understand one means the right arm and one means the left. The Eibishter is Ein Loid Musaguf, of course, but it means, in other words, when we talk about the Eibishter, we talk Dibur Torah, Kolosh Bnei Adam, and we're using the expression right and left arms relative to Hashem. One thing is it means the way in which Hashem runs the world with Chesed versus with Gvura, the way the Eibishter runs the world Api Derech HaTeva and Lamayla Mederech HaTeva, and so forth. The point is, in other words, that therefore, when a person says Yamin, I won't eat this bread, it amounts to that he's swearing by the right hand of Hashem. Or when he says Smol, I won't eat this bread, then he's swearing by the left hand of Hashem, and therefore it is an actual Shavur. Further on, a Mishnah starts talking about, now you have, there's three kinds of Nazir, basically. You have a regular Nazir, a typical Nazir, who makes a Nazirus for 30 days or more, and then at the end of that time, he cuts his hair, and he brings three Korbanos. Then you have two other special kinds of Nazir that discusses in the Masechta. One of them is called a Nazir Olam, which the Gemara is going to, the Gemara later on explains that Avshalom, the son of David, was an example of that. A Nazir Olam, the rule is with him, he's a Nazir for his whole life. That's what Olam means, forever. But he cuts his hair once every 12 months and brings his Korbanos, and then right away resumes his Nazirus. So in effect, a Nazir Olam, it's almost as if he has like a bunch of Nazirus in of 1 year at a time, back to back, but it's a special thing like that. And then you have something called a Nazir Shimshon, the classic example being Shimshon. So the Mishnah actually gets into it by way of if a person makes a neder to be a Nazir Shimshon, is it Bechlal Chal? The Chum say yes, Reb Shimon says no.
Long as you're serious.
So Nezirus of Shimshon, the Gemara ends up working out the exact details of it are he's never allowed to cut his hair. And we know in the story of Shimshon, he never cut his hair until Delilah tricked him and got him to sleep and then cut his hair. And then he lost his strength and was handed over to the Plishtim.
He took upon himself to be a Nazir?
Ah, so that's what we're going to talk about, how he became a Nazir in the first place. But so he's never allowed to cut his hair. He's never allowed to, like any Nazir, he's never allowed to eat grape products or anything like that. However, unlike a regular Nazir who was not able to become Tomei Mes, the Gemara works out that a Nazir Shimshin is able to become Tomei Mes, as we're going to discuss in a little bit where we see that from. So the Gemara says, Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Nazir Shimshin mutili tamei lemesim. That's exactly it. A person takes on Nazirus Shimshin, he is allowed to become Tomei Mes, unlike a regular Nazir. Shaken Matsinim, Shimshin Shinitma. As we see that Shimshin became Tomei because we find several times in his career where he killed Plishtim and necessarily he became Tomei from their bodies. The Gemara, by the way, in a few places mentions a machloikas whether the bodies of Goyim are Matame ba'oihel, whether they're Matame if you're under the same roof as them, or if you stare, if you walk over them or whatever. Everybody agrees that bodies of Goyim are Matame b'maga over masa by touching them or carrying them, and therefore Rabbi Yehuda is assuming, as the Gemara is going to work out the details in a little bit, that in fact when he killed Plishtim, he necessarily touched them. So therefore Rabbi Yehuda says a Nazir Shimshin must be allowed to become Tomei Mes. On the other hand, Rabbi Shimon Omer, ha'omer Nazir Shimshin loy amaklum. Reb Shimon says that if a person says, I'll be a Nazir Shimshin, what he said doesn't count for anything. It's not a valid neder at all. Because we never find that Shimshin himself actually made a neder of Nazirus. Exactly that. You find the Malach comes to Manoach's wife, Tzlopanis, her name was, the Gemara says, and the Pasuk doesn't say her name. The Gemara in Baba Basra and the Medrash in Bamidbar Rabbah say that her name was Tzlopanis. Tzlopanis. It's based on a Pasuk in Divrei Hayamim. So the Malach comes to her and tells her you can have a son, and make sure that he follows the rules of Nazir, that you follow the rules of Nazirus during your pregnancy. And then later on, the Malach comes and speaks to both of them and reiterates it. Anyway, the point is, Reb Shimon says, in order for it to be a valid kind of Nazirus, it would have to be what's called Dover HaNodr, something which a person is, something where to begin with, it can be taken on as a neder. Shimshin, we never find, took the Nazirus on himself with a neder. Therefore, Reb Shimon says there's no such thing as a Nazir Shimshin, except for Shimshin himself. So the Gemara goes and then deals with the ins and outs of these different opinions. At one point, the Gemara explains that Rabbi Yehuda is learning from the fact that it says that when it introduces the concept of Nazirus, it says Lahazir Lashem, that a person makes a Nazirus to Hashem. And Rabbi Yehuda learns from that extra word, Lashem, that there's such a thing as Nazirus Shimshin. So now the Gemara says, well, what does Reb Shimon do that with that? He who holds that it's not possible to become a Nazir Shimshin. So then he says that from that we learn that the real proper kind of Nazirus is when a person is doing it L'shem Shamayim and not for any other motive. Now, just like we learned as far as Nedarim, that sometimes a person would make a Neder for improper reasons, so it is with Nazirus. Sometimes a person, we find later in the Masechta, it gives examples where a person would say, I'll be a Nazir for not such good reasons necessarily. You might have a person might do it out of anger. A person might have it like to win a bet. You have examples later on in the Masechta where like you see people walk, you see somebody walking in a distance, and one person says, I'm a Nazir if that's Reuven, and the other one says, I'll be a Nazir if that's Shimshin, if that's Shimon, and so forth. So those are not really good reasons to be a Nazir. So therefore, Reb Shimon is learning from the word Lashem that there's a proper way and an improper way to be a Nazir. And in that connection, then the Gemara brings the famous story that we also had in Nedarim as far as Shimon HaTzadik and the Nazir, which we learned about it a few weeks ago in Nedarim. So Tanya, Omer Reb Shimon HaTzadik. It's interesting that it calls him here Reb Shimon HaTzadik. Back then, they didn't really use the title Rebbe. So in Nedarim, when we learned it, it just said Shimon HaTzadik. Anyway, he says, Miyomai Lo'achalti Asham Nazir Tomei. In all my life, and he was Kohen Gadol for 40 years, I never ate the Asham of a Nazir who became Tomei, because the Gemara explains in Nedarim over there, it's bad enough that he became a Nazir, not always for the right motives, but then if he becomes Tomei and he has to restart his Nazirus all over again, he's likely to regret, why did I ever bother becoming a Nazir in the first place? And then to a certain degree, it's like Cholin Ba'azorah. It's not literally, because he has to bring these Korbanos and he has to start his Nazirus over, but nevertheless, Shimon HaTzadik didn't want to eat from such a Korban. So chutz me odom echad, with the exception of one person, shabarilai min adorim, who came to me from the south of Eretz Yisrael, yifei einayim, he was beautiful of him in appearance, v'toiv roi, and is he also beautiful. Yifei einayim v'toiv roi is an expression from a pasuk. It means basically that both the it means that it's, it means that it, no, it means in other words that the Rashi explains, for example, on yifas toiv, yifas mara, there's the healthiness of the skin, and then there's the shape of the face and the body. So he was both. He had a healthy, he looked healthy as far as his skin and as far as his outer appearance, and also his appearance itself was objectively beautiful, that he was well proportioned and all. Anyway, and his curls of hair were arranged in rings and locks around his hair, around his head. So he looks very handsome, Poshet. Amarti loy, I said to him, Bni Mara Isla Shachis Sayo Noazer, my son, says Shimon Shadach to him, what made you decide to destroy this beautiful hair? You're coming now as a Nazir Tomei, now you're going to have to shave this beautiful hair and then regrow it and then shave it again at the end of your Nazirus. What motivated you to do that? Omali, so he tells me, Roya Hoyisi La Ovi Biiri, I was shepherding for my father, I was pasturing his sheep in my city. Vahalachti Lishev Mayim and Amayin, I went to draw water from the spring, Vinistakalti Bibabur Shali, and I noticed my reflection. You have to remember, in those times, mirrors weren't very common, and when mirrors were used, it was generally by women. So a person could go through a good part of his life never knowing what he looks like. So all of a sudden, he saw his reflection in the water. Pochas Yitzri, and my Yitzhahara started getting bigger on me and started to pochas, like pachas kamayim, like tried to be impetuous and hasty against me. Ubikash l'todeni min ha'olam, and was trying to drive me out of the world to make me do averis. When we learned about this in Nedarim, we learned a few different possibilities, what exactly his Yetzirah was trying to get him to do. Marsha explains over there that the fact that he mentions that he's from the south, which is a place of Chochmah, implies that he was a great Chocham. But he, meanwhile, what is he doing? He's doing this menial job for his father, taking care of his sheep. So now his Yetzirah is telling him, look at you, you have so much more capabilities than just Stam doing Kibbud Av V'Aim and taking care of his sheep. You should go someplace else and abandon your father and go make a name for yourself. You deserve it. So that's the Pochas Yitzhak lies, that his Yetzirah is trying to get him to be a Baal Gaiva and think that he should give up his Kibbud Av V'Aim. There's different other possibilities that other Mefoshim talk about. It means that his Yetzirah is telling him that you're so handsome, you have the capability of being giving into your taivas of znus and arayas and all that. Anyway, so Amarti loy, I said to my Yetzirah, Reiko, you empty one. Why are you priding yourself on a world that's not really yours? This world, Olam Hazeh, is not really yours. Eventually, what happens after a person dies is he's food for worms and maggots. Ha'avoida, I swear by the avoida of the Beis Mikdash, says this boy, that I will shave this hair that you, Yetzirah, are trying to convince me I'm so beautiful because of it. I'll shave you off l'shem shamayim.
She was only here.
That's why, so Shimon HaTzadik had asked him, what gave you the idea to become a Nazir? So that's he's saying, I became a Nazir as this example, because of this, to show my Yetzirah who's boss, basically.
Well,
to show.
Why does he want to shave his hand?
So that's why he wants to shave. That way, for a while, he won't be so beautiful. And that way, his Yetzirah is not going to try to convince him, look at you, look what you're capable of.
And then he goes back to Nazirus.
Ah, so no, the point is, a person is Nazirus, no, he became Tomei, which is why he's bringing an Oshim in the first place. An Oshim is one of the three korbanos that a Nazir who became Tomei brings. So he became Tomei accidentally, but the point is, Shimon HaTzadik knows, like this with a regular Nazir again, we don't know what his motivation was in becoming a Nazir in the first place. Mm-hmm. And even if it was a good motivation, he becomes Tomei and then he regrets, why did I get into this whole situation in the first place, and therefore his Oshim is in a certain sense Cholin Bazara. This boy, Shimon that Tzaddik realized from his story that he took on his Nazirus completely the Shem Shemayim for the right reasons, and therefore the fact that he became Tomei and the fact he's going to have to start his Nazirus all over again, he's not going to feel bad about that. He's going to do the second Nazirus with just as much enthusiasm as the first, and he's going to tackle use it to break his Yetzirah once and for all. The Maharal, by the way, makes a point in his Pirush on Pirkei Avos, where you have Ma'ayin Basol on Atahoylech. The Maharal mentions our Gemara over here, and he explains that also details why this boy is mentioning that he was pasturing his father's sheep and all that. He wants to point out, it's not the Yetzirah was getting the better of me because I was laying around doing nothing, and therefore the Yetzirah figured he has an opportunity. No, I was hard at work. I was doing something useful with my life, and then the Yetzirah came and tried to get me. So therefore, Shimon HaTzaddik realizes not just that he successfully beat his Yetzer Hara, but he wasn't in the first place. He had done whatever he could to keep the Yetzer Hara at bay, and now he uses this extreme measure to become a nazir to maintain it that way. So Amadti u'nashakti v'al roshoy. So Shimon HaTzaddik says, I stood up and kissed him on his head. Especially, I mean, his head is where his hair for Nazirus is. It also shows that he used his head in the right way to understand what to do. I told him, there should be many more Nazirim like you among the Jewish people. Alecha, you're the kind of person about which the Torah says, that a person makes a neder of Nazirus for Hashem. So in other words, therefore, so that's the Gemara brought this in to show Reb Shimon understands the word Lashem in the Pasuk in that sense. Not to learn that there's another kind of Nazir, namely a Nazir Shimshin, like Rabbi Yehuda said, but rather to say that Bechlal, it's a good thing when a Nazir is doing a Lashem, like this boy, but rather than the other cases where a person takes on a Nedir of Nazirus, not necessarily for such kosher reasons. Lahazir is Moshe Nazir, to become a Nazir to Hashem. Okay. So now, getting back to Shimshin, the Gemara asks, "Is Shimshin lav nazir hava?" So you're telling me Shimshin is not a true nazir? V'achdiv, doesn't the pasuk say the Malach says to Monoyach and to Tzlelponis, "Ki nizira l'kim yianar." Now the Gemara is assuming that what that means is that the Gemara is assuming that the Malach is telling Monoyach, when this child is born, you should declare him a nazir. Later on in the Masechta, it talks about a father has the right to do that. A father is. Later on in the Masechta, it talks about that a father has the right to declare his child a nazir.
Declare.
Yeah. So the Gemara is assuming that that's what the Malach means. I myself, I'm a Malach. Obviously, I don't have the ability to make your child a nazir. But when he's born, make sure that you do that. The answer is no. Hasan Malach hu dekamar. No, Reb Shimon understands that it means only the Malach said it, and that Manoach never said any such thing. Now, the halacha is not like Reb Shimon. There is such a thing as a nozer shimshin. And so the Rebbe talks about actually in a sicha, there is that, like the Gemara had assumed originally, that Monoyach did in fact say it when Shimshin was born, but then that it means, in other words, the Rebbe develops from that an idea in chinuch, that we actually don't find in the posik that Monoyach ever said any such thing. So does, but it means they gave Shimshin such a chinuch that he realized on his own, when he becomes bar mitzvah, he should take on the Nazirus on himself voluntarily. So in other words, not necessarily, it's true, maybe Manoach never told him in so many words, you are a Nazir, but he taught him what it means to be a Nazir, and he was mechanech him throughout his first, even from before he was born, and was saying throughout his first 13 years, that you have to grow up and become a Nazir, and it was such an effective chinuch that Shimshin actually taka did that when he became bar mitzvah and took on the Nazirus himself. Anyway, so therefore, so again, Reb Shimon says that Manoach never said he's a Nazir, and therefore you can't say there's such a thing as that type of Nazirus. All right, the Gemara says, "Menolan de itami lemesim." Fine. How do we know that Shimshin ever became tamei mes? Ilema bedichtiv. Are you going to say on the basis of one of the stories of Shimshin, at one point he's being attacked by the plishtim, so he takes a jawbone of a donkey and he kills 1,000 of them? The pasuk says, "Bilchia hamor he kasi elafish." He says, "With the jawbone of a donkey, I killed 1,000 people." So therefore, bepashtus, that means that he actually killed them. Now, the Rosh points out it's not really such a solid proof anyway. I mean, they were attacking him. He's entitled to save his life, even if it means becoming Tommy Mess, but still, the Gemara brings a different answer. Duma garduye gardi u garuye gari bahu v'lenoga bahu. Maybe only he garuye gardi u garduye gardi in him, but didn't actually kill him. There's a few explanations what that phrase means. Rashi, the Yvonne, rather, translates it as that he cut them, but not necessarily he cut them, but didn't necessarily kill them. So therefore, so he didn't actually touch them. He cut them like he used the jawbone as like a knife or a machete to cut them from a distance, but not necessarily to actually kill them. The Tosfos brings an explanation that it means that he shot arrows at them. He used the jaw almost like a boomerang, throwing it at them and killing them, and then getting it back and throwing it at the next one and killing him and so forth. The whole thing obviously was bederach nes, because the Medrash actually points out, by the way, the Medrash points out this jawbone was from a 3-day-old donkey, so it's not like it was that powerful a weapon in the first place. Obviously, it was there was ruach Hashem. Mind you, by the way, afterwards you find when Shimshin says this pasuk that Bilchia Chamori Kasi Elafish, I killed 1,000 with the jawbone. Afterwards, the pasuk says he became very thirsty. The Medrash says that at that point he was so weak that even if somebody brought him a cup of water, he wouldn't have been able to pick it up. The point is, as long as he recognizes his power comes from the Eibishter, then good, Nissim happened. When he all of a sudden thinks, I killed 1,000, then all of a sudden Eibishter shows him he got no power at all. They right away did tshuva, and they eventually made a ness and gave him water. Anyway, the point is, so maybe Vilanagamahu, maybe he didn't necessarily touch them to actually kill him. So that doesn't necessarily show that he's allowed to become tamei mes. Elamehocha. So rather, you have from an earlier story of Shimshon. Part of the story is he goes to the land of the Plishtim. He sees a girl over there he wants to marry. The Rambam points out he was Megayer her, but his parents asked, "What are you doing marrying a Plishti girl? Aren't there enough Jewish girls?" So the point was that Shimshon wanted to camouflage himself. He wanted to pretend like he's one of the Plishtim, and then when he goes and fights against them, they're not going to think he's doing it as a Jew, and they won't take it out on the Jews. They're going to think he's Stama Meshuggener, and what can we do? There's the Meshuggener running around among us. So part of his camouflage was to find this girl and secretly be Megayer her and then live among the Plishtim. No, not Delilah. That was later. That's Delilah's in Perek Zion. This is Perek Yudalid. It doesn't say her name. Anyway, the point is, during the wedding party, during the Sheva Brachas, the Pasuk describes, he poses a riddle to the Plishtim. He poses a riddle to his Plishti friends. He tells them, if you can get the answer to the riddle, then I'll give each of you, there are 30 of them, I'll give each of you a blanket and a change of clothing. If you can't figure out the riddle within the 7 days, then you'll each have to give me one. Kitzur Amaisa, they ruin the secret out of his wife. So now the Pasuk says that Shimshon got angry. He went down to the city of Ashkelon, Vayach Mehem Shloshim Ish. He killed 30 people, Vayikachas Chalitzusam, and he took their outfits and he gave them to the 30 friends to fulfill his part of the bet. Again, the whole point was to appear like some kind of a shuganer, like what's he going? Stam going to another city and killing people at random on the street. So they're gonna think that, you know what, this is a maniac, we better stay away from him.
He gave them clothing, that's why he took it back.
He took the clothing from these dead people to give to those people. He had to fulfill the terms of the bet. Since they had gotten the secret and told him the secret right before the end of the Sheva Brachas, then now he had to fulfill his end of it. So rather than having to go pay for 30 blankets and 30 changes of clothing to give to the Plishtim, so he accomplished it this way. So the point is, we see that he killed people and took off their clothes. Well, the Gemara says, okay, okay, so maybe he stripped them first and then he killed them. So in that case, he never touched them after they're dead. I says that doesn't work. The fact is, it says he killed them and then he took the clothing. So the Gemara says, fine, still the Dilma Goethesin Shavinun. Fine, maybe he only made them Goethesin. Maybe he hit them hard enough that they're on the verge of death. And then before they're actually dead, then he took off the clothing and then they died. So still he didn't become Tommy Mess. Now, mind you, Goethesin actually, it came up in today's Dafayomi. There's a difference between Goethes Vide Odom and Goethes Vide Shemayim, and it's not so simple. But anyway, the point is, the Gemara answers are the Gemara Gemuri. You know what? Never mind that. We have Bekabbalah that a Nozer Shimshin is allowed to become Tomei Mes. So we don't need, regardless of how we understand the psukim, we can say that he killed them outright and took off the clothing, because as a Nozer Shimshin, he is in fact able to become Tomei Mes, and that's that. And that's the point. In other words, Mefarshim explained, precisely because his role was to go and fight against the Plishtim and kill as many of them, so he needed to have, now on the other hand, he needed to be a Nazir in order to have that strength, Min HaShemayim, for that, so therefore he had to have a type of Nazirus that would allow him to become Tamei Mes, and therefore there's Halacha L'Moshe Misinai that such a type of Nazirus exists. Yen Yen Mashiach Ha'Geula. The Pasuk talks about that Mashiach will be a king and a Nasi. So that means the king has two roles. He's going to be a king, Loichem Mochamas Hashem, and he's going to be a Nasi who teaches the people the ways of Hashem. Rambam brings both of these things in respective places. That's why by the king it says Alehem, over them, but by the Nasi it says Lohem, for them, because the king has to be higher than the people, Alehem. But the Nasi is, he brings the people closer and makes it that they should be able to understand what he's saying, and therefore the expression is Lohem. Okay, continuing on halachas of Eruv Chatzeres. It has to be that the food for the Eruv Chatzeres, you're not makbid if somebody else eats it. Because after all, the whole point is it belongs in common to all the neighbors who are included in the Eruv. So make sure you don't use for the Eruv Chatzeres something of your Shabbos food that you prepared, because you would object if somebody ate it and you don't have it on your Shabbos table. So make sure it's some food that you don't need for Shabbos. Like this, people nowadays generally use a box of matzah and they keep it around all year. So then you don't really have a problem with that. If somebody were to come and eat it, you wouldn't object. You would just take out a new one and use it for the next Shabbos.